How's it, everybody? Welcome back for another episode. It's been a little while, but I'm back here with my buddy Ronald. How's it going over there, Ronnie?
Listen, everybody. Been a while. It hasn't been long enough, though.
Hasn't been long. I agree. I'm already sick of you, and we've been on here
Oh,
for all of 30 seconds.
all of 30 seconds. I know. I'm already sick of it.
Yeah. So, Ronnie, you've had a busy October gallivanting around Europe a little bit. Escaped from Spain, you went to Germany and met up with our buddy Dylan. How's the Hofbräu
Yeah.
still standing?
Still standing, but packed as always.
Yeah.
That place must, that place prints money. Honestly, if they may just serve beer, cheap foods, and yeah, and print money.
And it's lekker festive in there. We've had some good jols in that place. The beer is nice and strong. But you guys got a little on the razzle that evening, hey, trying to phone me at midnight for a video call and neither of you could bloody stand.
Yeah, that's true. And then I had to navigate to using the public transport to get back to our hotel, and I couldn't see my phone screen. And yeah, I'm not 20 anymore, that's for sure.
Yeah, those drinking days. What, it was 2014. We went on a Contiki via Munich and we got very festive there. And we did it again in 2019. But now, in our, well, me in my 30s, you in your 50s, I think it's quite a challenge.
Yeah, me in my 50s, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and I'm not only talking about your super brew rank there, hey?
I mean, if you really want to talk unpack the super brew, I'm beating you now. I mean, I've had 3 weeks that were poor, but we weren't recording for the last 3 weeks. You were beating me, and now suddenly I'm beating you. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
schematics, schematics. So you're coming back to South Africa soon, Ronald. You're getting ready for some chops and some biltong.
Yeah, I'm in a lamb chop coma for 2 months, that's for sure.
Going to eat as much of it as humanly possible, hey?
Yeah, no, I won't. It'll be a couple of days, and I'm sure it'll just go back to normal. But biltong, I found biltong in Germany though. If anybody ever needs like proper biltong, I know exactly where to find it in Munich. It's like real South African biltong. Then again, it could be because I haven't had this year, and it was the world's crappiest biltong, but it tasted so good. Chili bites that actually burnt, and druivors and proper biltong. And the lady at the counter was trying to explain to me like, well, this is what biltong is, and this is people enjoy it when they drink like beers. And I'm like, lady, just I know I was born into biltong, so please.
But tell me, did it cost the price of a small apartment in South Africa?
99 euros a kilo.
That is nuts. Times what,
Yeah.
20 roughly? It's a grand.
Times 20.
2 grand.
Yeah, it's 2 grand a kilo. And what do we pay? We what do, in back in South Africa we pay 200, 250 rand a kilo, and 350 rand would be like really expensive biltong, right? Now this is 2,000 rand a kilo, 1,850 rand a kilo.
Yeah, that is nuts, eh, Ronnie. I hope you enjoyed
Wow.
every bloody bite of
No,
that.
I did. Dylan and I did. We broke it up into three parts. We had the sliced biltong outside where we bought it. We literally couldn't wait any longer. Then later in the day, we had the druivors. Granted, with the price, we only bought a little bit, but we had that there. And then 2 days, and then I forgot about the chili bites. And 2 days later, Dylan actually said to me, like, hey, you've got this chili bites. Like, we've got to eat this, these chili bites. And it was a beautiful surprise.
Oh, well, that's a lacquer one, Ronnie. I'm glad you got some biltong, a bit of a teaser before you come back this side. I, on the other hand, have been going through home renovations. Let me tell you, I know more about tiles now than I ever thought I would in my whole life. It's a nightmare. Shopping for tiles, they do not look the same once you bring them to your house as what they look at in the store. It doesn't matter what lights you put them in the store, you put them in your home, they look completely different. So,
Yeah, you clearly don't watch The Block though.
the block.
The Block, like that Australian reality show where they renovate houses. I like that show. But they always buy stuff and then they have to take it outside to look at it, what it looks like under the sun before they make a decision.
Yeah, so while I've learned a lot about tiles now, definitely that they are full of sorcery because you buy them, you bring them in, they don't look right. You go back to the shops, you think, okay, wait, this one looks better. You come back, it looks different. So it's been an experience, but finally getting towards the final touches. And then also had a big month getting engaged, Ronald.
Congratulations.
Becoming an adult finally, hey?
Finally, only at the age of 52,
At the age of 52, you're getting confused, old man. That is you. I'm in
eh?
my 30s.
The only truth here is that you're older than me, so.
Yeah. Well, luckily she's a rugby lover, so that's a big win. Got someone to go to the games with.
I'll take it. I'll be relegated to the bench happily for you, buddy.
But you did manage to catch a bit of rugby in Spain. Hey, who did you see live there?
La Rochelle versus Bayonne over here in Spain. So, yeah, so Bayonne's just like a few kilometers up the road. By a few, I mean maybe a 40-minute drive. And the big stadium in the area is here in Spain. So that's where they came and played. And look, you know, the French are, you know, we're kind of at war with the French after what happened at the World Cup last year. So we haven't spoken too kindly of them for a while now. But I can tell you what, the French really know how to support rugby, and it's very festive at their games. Music, good music. We had beer in the stands, some entertainment. And, you know, they've got all these arbitrary songs that they sing. And, you know, it's actually gives me goosebumps listening to some of the songs that they were singing.
Yeah, you did send us through some content to put up, so I'm sure a couple of the listeners caught that. It did look really festive and like quite a good game. And I mean, you did see Big Willie and the rest of the La Rochelle side. So I was quite jealous.
Yeah, and they got pumped by Bayonne, right? So I went in there expecting La Rochelle to actually win. But Bayonne, sheesh. So if you're watching the top 14 at the moment, Bayonne's doing exceptionally well. They put a big game on this weekend too. So yeah.
Well, Ronnie, on to the main reason that we have resumed season 4 of the podcast is because the Autumn Nation series is upon us. So it started last weekend with only 2 fixtures. Coming into this weekend, we've got 10 of them coming up. So let's just take a quick look at what happened between England and the All Blacks, where England went down 22-24 at home, dropping it in the final 20 minutes or so. Is that a mentality problem, Ronnie, or are all the fans saying that pulling Marcus Smith off cost them the game?
Yeah, look, that's exactly what everybody's saying, right? Marcus Smith was playing well, and it's now been a number of games where they've subbed him off when he was on fire. So I'm a little bit surprised by that. But in the same breath, you know, everybody says, you know, if somebody's playing well, just because you have a bench doesn't mean you have to play them all. But in the same breath, you know, you have someone like Rassie who's made it an art using the bench. You bring on your bench regardless. They deserve game time. They, you know, your team's got to get used to that. So look, it's if the ball had traveled a few inches to the left, England would have won. So it was close enough, and they're all up in arms now because it hit the post and some poor decision and Marcus Smith coming off. But honestly, a few inches to the left, England had that game.
Look, let's not pretend we're upset about the fact that England lost. Neither of us is losing any sleep over that. We were definitely backing the All Blacks in that one. But I think 100%. it's a mentality problem in that camp as well. You know, there's a number of games now that they've dropped off in the final 10, 15, 20 minutes of a fixture. And, you know, that takes adjusting from the coaching box into how you handle that. Well, Rassie's tactic in those instances is to re-inject, you know, power from the bench, lift the game up in those stages. Coaches need to find a way around it. And it does seem like it's becoming a bit of a problem in the English camp.
Well, you can maybe have a look at the All Blacks and how they treated the sort of end of that game, right? So it's been a couple of fixtures where they've also struggled in the last 20 minutes and, you know, haven't really scored points in the second half, but particularly in the last 20 minutes. But then putting someone like D-Mac on the bench and using him as an impact player, you know, that seemed to sort of inject that sort of energy and, you know, that sort of change gears for the All Blacks, right? And they picked it up at the back end of the game, which is something that they haven't been doing all year. So, you know, we could criticize England, you know, they dropped off in the end of the game, but the All Blacks actually picked it up. So well done to the All Blacks, and they've, I believe, fully deserved to win that game.
No, I definitely agree with you, Ronnie. And then, I mean, what do we make of Wallace Setiti? He is on fire for the All Blacks, eh? Many calling him Jerome Kano.
Jerome Kano, yeah, absolutely. No, he's great, fantastic player, and you can play him at 6, you can play him at 8, you can possibly even play him at 7. But yeah, Wallace Setiti is a young guy, and he's going to be there for many years to come. So yeah, sorry to any other 6s or /8s that want to play for the All Blacks, because you got to go through Wallace Setiti first.
Yeah, and I mean, he had a cracker season throughout the Rugby Championship. It is his debut season for the All Blacks, and for him to be talked about in the way he is at the moment is definitely big, big praise for the young man. I'm keen to see how his career develops.
Yeah, but let's not forget that sometimes the All Blacks play some credible players and then we never hear from them again. You know, Nahe Milne, the Scudder, you know, Julian Sevilla, they've had a number of players that come in on incredible and then they just seem to find a better player. So, yeah, Wallace Setiti, good, playing really well. Let's hope he keeps it up and stays in the team.
But that victory for the All Blacks coming at a bit of a cost, Ronnie, because Cody Taylor and Beauden Barrett are now both out with concussion, so they won't be available for selection in the big game against Ireland on Friday. But the biggest talking point out of this game surrounds Joe Marler and his comments about binning the haka. You know, flippant comments, he came out late and said, you know, he was just trying to get a bit of banter and hype around the game. Subsequently, he's retired now from England as of Sunday. 95 tests, 5 away from becoming a test centurion. Did that play any role in his retirement, do you think, Ronnie?
What, the comments? Do you think he made the comments and then decided to retire after that? Or how are you asking the question?
Yeah, I've seen suggestions on social media that he was sort of pushed out of the English camp after making comments like that. They were seen as derogatory or in some instances racialized. I don't necessarily agree with it. I think he said, you know, his heart wasn't in it anymore. He couldn't perform to that level. But I think you do question why someone 5 tests away from being a test centurion, who was in the squad for this end of year series, would have bowed out in that fashion.
Yeah, I don't really know what's going on there, because like you said, there's something going on there. He was in the camp. He kind of left the camp for personal reasons, came back to the camp, and in this time he'd also made the comments, right? So he'd come back to the camp in the week and then announced his retirement. So very strange. I don't know if the comments came before or after, or a reaction to him being potentially pushed out. I don't know, but Joe Marler, you know, he's known for making some ridiculous statements.
Yeah, that's definitely true, Ronnie. Well, then we go over to the Scotland versus Fiji game. Now, I don't know how much you can read into a game like this, because Fiji were severely under strength, many of their players playing in France, so they weren't yet released for test duty. But Scotland racking up a hell of a victory, 57 points to 17. It is a record margin as well. What did you make of that game, Ronnie?
Yeah, Scotland did their job, right? So granted, like you say, under strength side with Fijian players not being released, but Scotland still managed to put 57 points on Fiji. So, you know, they did their job. Their players played really well, and I think it's a fantastic warm-up fixture for them, if you can call it a warm-up fixture, you know, leading into what's coming this weekend and for the rest of the series.
Look, those early yellow cards to Fiji, 2 in a row, basically 20 minutes down to 14 men, was really rough on them, as well as they're getting into their season. And Scotland definitely capitalizing on that. But an interesting one for me, it was also the return of Darcy Graham. You know, he's been a stellar performer for the Scots, but he's been out injured for quite a while. So he's now played 40 matches and scored 28 test tries. Then you've got Duan van der Merwe on the other wing with 42 test matches and 29 tries. And throughout that test, they were literally trading off tries to see who was going to have the Scottish record, because apparently Duan has one more try and he holds the record. South African holds the Scottish try scoring record.
Yeah, no, I'll, let me not make comments about that. But yeah, good on both Darcy Graham and Duan.
Yeah, I just had to give a little bit of a jibe towards the Scottish listeners we'll have on the show this week before we play them at the weekend. A little bit of stuff. No, Duan doing very, very well for the Scots. Ronnie, in a Scotland game like this, you know, we know that they can run the ball. We know, I mean, they didn't have Finn Russell this weekend. They were still running some incredible patterns. Tuipulotu doing wonders at center. He's now captaining them as well. But can they match physicality? Can they mix physicality into their game, Ronnie? Or is it all about the flair, all about the running and the tries out wide?
You know, look, they're going to definitely have to front up against the Springboks, right? But that's a tough ask, right? Springboks are arguably the most physical side, you know, in the top 10 at the moment. So, you know, arguments can be made for Ireland and all of that. But, you know, we as South Africans, we pride ourselves, and the whole purpose of our bench is to inject even more physicality into the game at a certain point in time. So it's going to be a tall ask for them to rely solely on physicality and be able to match the Springboks on that. So they'll have to fall back on a bit of Finn flair, Finn-like flair. And spread the ball perhaps a bit.
Yeah, some finesse. I had to throw that bad joke out there, Ronald. I had to. So then, Ronnie, let's take a look at the upcoming fixtures. As I mentioned, there are 10 games coming this weekend. That's Friday to Sunday. Let's take a look at the first one on Friday night, 10 past 10 kickoff here in South Africa. But a hell of a fixture as Ireland hosts the All Blacks. It's going to be a sold-out game. I see Peter O'Mahony's back in the Irish squad. He proved his fitness playing for Munster against the All Blacks team. So he's likely in the selection frame as well. What are you thinking for this one, Ronnie?
Now, look, well, I'll obviously be supporting the All Blacks because should the All Blacks win, Ireland dropped to third on the log on the rankings, just FYI. But yeah, look, it's going to be a big ask. Ireland have obviously been preparing for a while now for this one. The All Blacks have had two fixtures already in the form of Japan and now with England as well. So they'll be well gelled. But just it's just interesting now, and maybe while you talk, I'm just going to research something. That the game's being played on Friday, I find quite interesting. That's not much of a turnaround, or it's 1 day less turnaround from Saturday to this one. And I just wonder if aren't we playing Ireland? No, we're not playing Ireland.
It is definitely a shorter turnaround. We're actually seeing some of the sort of scheduling that we saw in the World Cup taking place this weekend because the Boca are also playing on a Sunday. But my prediction for this one, obviously backing the All Blacks, would love to see the Irish drop down to third. I do, however, believe that Ireland have the stronger team, and I think they might walk away with a 1 to 2 point victory in this one. What's your prediction there?
Yeah, so you're going with a when in doubt, back the home side approach. I'm going to go with the All Blacks purely because, you know, they didn't do so well in the Rugby Championship as well as they would have liked. So I think they'd be preparing accordingly, and they've had their two warm-up fixtures. So they'll be ready to go. So I'll back the All Blacks by 2 points.
There we go. Ronnie, then we have some smaller fixtures in Canada versus Chile. That's on Saturday at 1 p.m. I would assume that Canada would win this game, although they've severely struggled of late. Quite a tough one to call because you don't really know what you're getting from either of these sides.
Yeah, look, I'll probably stick with Chile, right? So, you know, they've obviously done really well in the last 2 or 3 years. So stepped it up a bit, and Canada's fallen a little bit out of favor, you know, not qualifying for the last World Cup. So, you know, there's not much to go on because we don't follow these teams as much as we should, right? But I'll back Chile.
So the next game, I really hope you're going to be attending live, considering you are in Spain at the moment. So Ronnie, the rugby pundit, coming to us from Espanol or España, Spain versus Uruguay, 1:45 kickoff.
So is the rugby pundit going to sponsor my trip?
The rugby pundit will sponsor your ticket.
No, I said my trip, not my ticket.
Where's the trip? How far away is it from where you are?
No, look, it's not a reasonable thing. But yeah, that would have been really enjoyable to go to. But yeah, look, Spain, Uruguay. So who do we back? Spain, supposedly, well, they did qualify for the World Cup and then falling out due to some technicalities. And Uruguay, you know, having been regular attendees at the World Cup over the years. So look, who do you back here, right? It's probably Spain, I would say. When in doubt, back the home side.
Yeah, I'm going to go the other way and back the Lilos. I'm going to back Uruguay, a bit more experience in their team, and they're likely to get the win. Then, Ronnie, England versus the Wallabies. Now, this is an interesting game because Steve Borthwick seems to love having four vice captains in a team, which makes me think he's indecisive as hell. And I would love to see the Wallabies get one over on the English. I just don't know if the Wallabies are there yet. What are you thinking?
No, it's a tall ask, especially after the English performance against the All Blacks, right? So, look, I feel sorry for the Wallabies, and I'm obviously going to be backing them, but I just think England's a step too far. England's showed after this weekend that they can play properly, so yeah, look, it's a tall ask, but, you know, we're going to be supporting the Wallabies.
Yeah, we've got to hope that the Wallabies take it, and I really would love to see them take it, but I think England just a little bit more of a settled side. I do think it's going to be a tight score, 5 points around there, but yeah, England to take it at home. Ronnie, Portugal versus the USA. After how the USA has been performing and how good Portugal's been performing, I'm definitely backing the Porters to take this one.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. So Portugal to win this one, but it should be an exciting match, right?
It should really be. We've seen some incredible tries come from Portugal throughout the World Cup, and then we played them in Bloemfontein this year. I was there for that game. Really impressed by the progress they're making. Victor Matfield's been consulting with them from time to time with their pack and their lineouts as well. So yeah, hoping Portugal can get a win there. Then Romania versus Tonga. I think 4 years ago, you would have taken a foregone conclusion that Tonga would have won this one. I don't think that's necessarily the case now. Romania also playing some decent rugby from time to time. What are you predicting in that one, Ronald?
Yeah, no, of course, Romania's always been knocking on the door of the Six Nations, right? Them and Georgia, you know, of the Division Two sides in Europe, Romania's always been up there. But look, I back the Tongans, right? So the Pacific Nation, you know, they've had their competition in the Pacific Nations Cup, so they should be well oiled. So I'll probably back the visitors here, Tonga.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one to see what goes on there. And then probably the most difficult one for me to pick this weekend is Italy versus Los Pumas. Now, Los Pumas have beaten France, South Africa, Australia, and New Zealand this year, which is no easy feat. And that is a hell of a record to have. But we've spoken on this show before about their mood swings in terms of the games. They're the French of old. 1 week they can annihilate somebody, and the next weekend they look like they belong playing in the African Nations Cup. So, what are we expecting from Los Pumas in this one? Are they going to take it, or are we going to see some Andrea Capuoso magic steal the show for them?
Yeah, look, I don't want to speak too ill of Italy, but I think Los Pumas have proven that they're an incredible side, right? And rightly so. Yes, they do swing hot and cold, but I think even the Los Pumas cold is enough to win a game against Italy, even in at the Italians' home ground. So look, I'll still back the Pumas here. I think there's not much doubt for me, but look, anything can happen, and you know, a lot of upsets can happen, and then, you know, I'll happily put my hand up next week and say I was wrong. But I think even a poor Pumas side should do enough against Italy.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there, Ronald. Then France versus Japan. France will likely put out a full strength team. Eddie Jones seems to think Japan can take anyone, and every week he's saying this is the biggest game Japan's ever going to have, and then they get a lacquer polokwane to kakamas. So, I'm backing France to put a good 20 points over Japan in that one.
Yeah, because 20 points is a lot. Well, look, it depends on the side that they put out there, right? So if France decide to go with another bloody experimental side, I'll be very upset, But yeah, so let's see what this holds. But yeah, I'll probably also back France for this one. Maybe not by 20 points, though.
Then, Ronnie, a fixture that has the potential to be a really quality matchup this weekend is Wales versus Fiji. Wales also in a rebuilding phase under Gatlin. They're a little bit lost at the moment, not reaching the form that's seen them win the Six Nations and be contenders in the playoff stages at the World Cup and the likes. Whereas Fiji's going to be back to full strength, and we know how exciting of a game they can bring to the field when they're, you know, on the up and they've got their side together, they're happy and settled. What are you picking for this one?
Yeah. So you're quite right. This is the potential of going both ways, right? So Fiji packing some heat there. Wales, like we've mentioned, in a rebuilding phase, but you know, they've been in a rebuilding phase now for a long time. And also, yeah, I suppose they're very familiar with each other and the way each other plays, seeing as it's probably the most played fixture at the World Cup every 4 years. So, yeah, look, I'm probably going to rely on Wales to get this one, but it's not going to be by much, and it's not going to be a comfortable win. Purely, I'll say, because the Fijians aren't together. They aren't training together at the moment. So the team is perhaps a little bit fractured, and there's a lot that they're going to have to do in a week. So I'll probably back Wales.
Yeah, so that fixture's on Sunday at 20-4. I'm going to back Fiji to take this by at least one try. I think they're going to get their noses up, and Wales going to see the struggles that we've seen them dealing with the whole year continue. And then the big fixture that we've all been waiting for, 6:10 on Sunday evening, Scotland hosts the Springboks at Murrayfield. Now, normally, you guys will know from our show, we like to cover the team that's been named by Dr. Erasmus. Unfortunately, the Springbok team announcement is scheduled for 12 o'clock on Thursday, so it won't be in this episode. But I thought Ronnie and I could maybe debate a couple of the positions that are up for grabs at the moment, specifically starting with tight head prop, where Bok incumbent Frans Malherbe is out injured. Who are we playing there, Ronnie? Vincent Kok, Vilku Loh, or Thomas Du Toit?
Yeah, look, I'd probably like to see Vilku Loh get an opportunity to play a tight head. Although I think we'll probably go with somebody tried and tested like Vincent. Unless Rassie, you know what, Rassie, and as I said it now, I think probably Vilko could even start and to bring Vincent Karkov as part of the bomb squad, right? In case things go pear-shaped, you've got a lock like Vince, big Vince to rely on. But I think Vilko he's a unit, and I would look forward to seeing him in a Springbok jersey.
Look, one thing's for sure, there's going to be at least four South African props on the field at any moment in time. No, I think Vincent's going to get the starting role. And I think Thomas, because of his utility that he can play both loose head and tight head, will get the bench role. Vilko Loh is a late call up to the Springbok squad after Jan Hendrik Wessels got injured. Quality scrummager, but I think he's going to get a bit of time to settle into the team setup before he gets a starting opportunity and a test. Then at lock, Ronnie, Sosa's back, Franco Mostert back in the mix. Arjia Snyman is also back. And then we've got Ruan Nokia, who really outperformed everyone in the rugby championship. So number four, I'm almost certain, is going to Irben. Number five, I have a feeling Ruan Nokia has done enough to retain that jersey. And Arjia Snyman will be included on the bench at the expense of Sos. What are you thinking there?
Yeah, I suppose, look, it all comes down to, are we doing a 6-2 split or are we going 7-1? Maybe, you know, that'll all depend on whether Sos and Arjia and Ruan Nokia can all find their way into the 23 at the same time. I think you're right with Eben getting the 4 jersey. You know, they'll just try and build on that record of his now to 210 caps. Something ridiculous. But yeah, look, I think Ruan Nokia would probably be my starting 5. So yeah, that leaves Arjia Snyman and Sos. Yeah, Arjia over Sos, I think, unfortunately, because I like Sos.
What about at 8th man, Ronnie, where we've got Jasper Wiese, who's the incumbent. You've got Kwakha Smith, who's very comfortable at playing there. We've recently seen Siya Kolisi deployed there for the Sharks. And then you've got the exciting youngster from the Blue Bulls, Cameron Hanekom, receiving a late call up to the squad. I have a feeling Hanekom's getting a start this weekend, Ronald.
Yeah, well, if Cameron Hanekom gets a start at 8, though, that means we're taking two very experienced flankers onto the field, right? With Peter Steph de Toy and I suppose Sia. And if that's our 7-6-7 pairing, then I'd be willing to agree with you that Cameron's got the 8. But if we try and introduce another lock, maybe Peter Steph de Toy stays rested for another week and they save him for next week's fixture. Yeah, I don't know. But Cameron Hanekom in with a shot for sure. He's an exciting player. But I think the mere fact that, you know, somebody had to get injured for him to then get introduced into the side, I think he's maybe third or fourth in that pecking order.
Yeah, one thing's for sure, Ronnie, when looking at the Springbok squad, you can never discount Rassie Erasmus pulling a rabbit out the hat, putting something none of us see. For all we know, Kobus Reinach's going to start at lock alongside Irben, and Apalele Fassi's playing hooker. You know, never know. So we don't know what Rassie's going to do, but one thing is for certain, Ronnie, and that is that the Springboks defense and the patterns that they deploy are going to have to be rock solid. Finn Russell is the master of unlocking a defense. We did it in the World Cup. We can do it again. We just have to stick to our structures. I am picking a Bok win by 10 to 15 points, Ronnie. What have you got?
Oh, 10 to 15 points. That would be a comfortable win. I'd like to possibly see even more. But again, it's going to come down to, does Rassie regard this as a warm-up match, as a match for the side to gel? Or, you know, or how does he look? How does he approach this? Is this where he wants to put a lot of points on it? And so, yeah, it's either going to be 10 points or it's going to be 20 points.
Yeah, this is going to be a cracker. I cannot wait for Bok Rugby to get back underway. So much to watch this weekend. It's honestly going to be epic. Well, guys, that's it for today's episode.
Thanks for joining for the banter and staying for the chat. My fokjong, dit was lekker.
Make sure you smash that like button and subscribe on your preferred listening platform so you won't miss a moment of the madness.
Catch you back here next Wednesday.